Card presents Back Issue Bloodbath with your hosts, Andrew Young and Petula Neal.
To quote the once arguably great Eiffel 65, I'm blue, dabba-dee, dabba-die. Dabba-dee, dabba-die. Dabba-dee, dabba-die. Welcome to Back Issue Bloodbath. I'm Andrew Young.
I'm Petula Neal.
And this week, we are looking back at a beloved comic from the early 2000s, Spider-Man Blue, written by Jeff Loeb with art by Tim Sale and colors by Steve Buccolato. Loeb and Sale kind of became big in the late 90s with their work at DC doing such titles as Batman, The Long Halloween, Superman for All Seasons, and Batman Dark Victory. And so Marvel wanted them to come over and do their retro style stories in their sandbox. And thus was the birth of the Color series, which started with Daredevil Yellow, a book that we'll probably cover at some point on the show. And this was the second chapter of that series, Spider-Man Blue. And it kind of takes you back to the time of a more innocent time for Peter Parker. Some of the worst moments in his life had not happened. Yes, of course, the death of Uncle Ben had happened, but if you look back at those stories, he was taking that in stride. But the much darker things that would continue to happen have not yet happened yet at this point in his history. Now, Petula, is this the first time you've read Spider-Man Blue, or did you pick it up back in the day?
I think I read this as one of our other artist things. I don't even remember.
Oh, probably for Tim Sale.
Yeah. That tracks. Because as I was reading this, I was like, I have done this speed run through the hits of Spidey before. Here's the thing, listener. My personal vendetta against the other comic book app resulted in me overpraising occasionally some of the long overdue improvements in the Marvel app. But I will say the one thing I would like is a bit more of like a history of like when I've read things, because sometimes I just like when I'm bored or had a couple gummies. So it's that feeling of, have I just read so many comic books and so many stories are retconned that I feel like I've read this before? Did I really read this before? But it was like, I got to like the third one. I was like, 100% I read this before. Yeah. Right. There was one of the moments when MJ comes busting through a doorway and the panel is just like hips, da da, ba da da da. It's like not the first time, like when his aunt is, you know, hey, like my friend has this cute, like whatever, she's gonna, and he's like, ugh, the pity day, I want to get back to town and hang out with Gwen. And then MJ rolls in and it's, you know, great googly moogly eyes.
Yeah,
that panel seemed familiar. It was the later panel when like they're coming in and out of the new like squat that he's got with Osborn's boy. And yeah, that was where I had the, I guess it's not a core memory, it's just probably a not too distant past gummy soaked memory of like, oh yeah, I read this before. But I was like, I'm still gonna reread the whole thing.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I read it when it first came out, because at that time Loeb and Sale were the hot property at the comic shops. If they had a series coming out, people were wanting to pick it up. And I was working at a comic shop at a time and was one of those people picking this book up. Especially since, in my opinion, like you mentioned, it plays the hits of mm-hmm. Spider-Man. It is one that really plays the core essentials of Spider-Man and what you think of Spider-Man when you think of his earlier adventures. The series recounting the events of The Amazing Spider-Man, issues 40 to 48, and issue 63. With, of course, different things peppered in, not exactly the same moments that didn't happen in these issues that we get to see from a different perspective, which was kind of the key thing that they had created over at DC. If you look at Superman for All Seasons, it is playing between the moments of John Byrne's Man of Steel miniseries. So this plays between the moments of those classic Spider-Man issues. And with it, it really gives you like another side of other characters that we didn't get at that time. Like the idea that Kraven the Hunter, when he shows up in the comics, that he had actually been staging all of the fights that Spider-Man had leading up to that in the days with the Vulture and whatnot, that he was the mastermind behind that. That, of course, was not from the original comic series. Kraven just showed up and took on Spider-Man. And this, it gives him a bit more depth. Like, he was studying his prey by having him take on these animals and everything like that. So giving depth to Kraven the Hunter. And that's what I like, is you look at these scenes, and it's like you get more out of somebody like Kraven the Hunter or a Flash Thompson or a Mary Jane or a Gwen, because we get to see just a little bit more, just a little sprinkle to their characters, even Harry Osborn as well. And so that's, for me, one of the things that I love the most about this series, is that it kind of goes, let's dwell in these characters, because the original stories were more about the events of him taking on the villains. So now let's actually deal with the supporting cast and him and how they interacted. Because for a book that does have a fight with a villain almost every issue, it's more about the Peter Parker trying to get over sickness when, you know, he has two beautiful women doting over him and he's pissed off that he can't hang out with either of them because he's got to go fight and be Spider-Man. Those are the moments that this series dwells in. So even though it's called Spider-Man Blue, to me, this is a Peter Parker book.
It is, but in the way that often T'Challa is the driving force moving through his stories, but in many ways, he's like the least interesting.
So Judd Hirsch and Taxi.
Yeah. I mean, but make it Thirst Trap, because it's still one of the things they do keep from the Romita is like to super hot Peter. I mean, everybody's kind of, you know, noir, femme fatale, kind of very similar to some of the things I love about When in Rome from the Catwoman, their DC collab. But like Peter's kind of an adorable lunkhead schmuck who's just doing Peter things, you know, being late for his own housewarming party to, you know, save people in the streets and people being befuddled why two women are under him. It's like, I'm sorry. Yeah, he has no money because his boss is always deferring his invoice payments to like 90 day plus terms. But look at him. And just, I'm sure we know what he looks like in that suit. So you're telling me when all of those ladies are coming by the apartment and giving him the quick hug, they can't feel that body, yada, yada, just because he's just wearing regular Joe pants? Come on.
Yeah.
All of that to say, it's the people around him. Like when we see him with May in the kitchen and we know she's sad, and like their art style, the way they do sort of like the dark shadows under her eyes, and you see the love, but also like Peter wants to like live his life and move, but he doesn't want to leave her. Mm-hmm. You see him at work and you see J. Jonah and Robbie just being ultimate good cop, bad cop. Obviously, Harry and Flash and the villains. The way it opens with the goblet, and it's that perfect, like, just carved out kind of super almost cosplay energy, just launch it, angles. And all of the other villains, like, you see his relationship with Croc in and out of being underground.
You mean the lizard?
Oh, the lizard. The lizard. The lizard. Yeah. It's like, hey, so family's coming to town. How's our stress doing? Like, what are we doing? Oh, fun. Like, I asked you to play with chemicals. This isn't going to go badly. Like, it's just all of the other characters are doing the more interesting things, and Peter's just moving through them like an adorable bohunk. Right, and it's sometimes tiring. When he hit the pile of snow on that roof and was just laying there for a minute, I was like, honey, stay down. Like, you're not Captain America. Like, take a rest. Like, take a few minutes. And again, he somehow still, when he loses, he wins. He works himself to exhaustion and borderline walking pneumonia. And then he's got like two women on his bed trying to caregive.
Yeah.
And I'm sure if Aunt May had had the time to get into town with old Anna Watson, they would have been there too. But he still had the Watson soup. Which honestly, even the way he ate it, it looked delicious. I understand this is a comic book, but I was like, I think I want soup now, and I don't even like soup.
Yeah. Now it's interesting because you talk about, you know, the liking the soup, and the Peter having the matinee idol a la Romita Sr. type look. Before this series, a lot of people, even people who loved Tim Sale, referred to him as the guy that does a great job of drawing people beautifully ugly. This was the series where I felt like Tim Sale was like, fuck you, I can draw pretty people too. Because Peter, Gwen, and MJ all look amazing in this series. Like, every time he brings MJ in, it's always a splash page. And it's always like, as you put it, the... how did you put it again?
Great googly moogly.
Yeah, great googly moogly, exactly. And then the moments like when we lead up to the end, the last issue where Gwen and Peter embrace, like that is like right out of a scene from the old classic Romita romance comics, you know? So I really felt like Tim Sale was like, I'm going to show you guys that I can draw really sexy people. And you guys are just calling me the guy does a good job of drawing everybody ugly. That's bullshit.
There's a couple of scenes. There's one where I forget, is it Gwen or MJ's just sitting in a chair and you get like sort of like a part side view and it's just, good Lord, like you're having a great time. Even Flash looks like, okay, 50% of the time he looks like somebody you should make sure doesn't give you a drink at a frat party. But even a couple times, like, oh, he looks really good. Yeah. Yeah. The Osbournes always look a little bit creepy to me, and they do sort of keep the Osbournes in that, you know, ugly, beautiful, ugly range, but you kind of need to because
oh, of course.
They went hard on the angles for the Goblin. So, like, yes, nobody looks exactly the same as they do in costume. Shouts to you, Rhino. Better than I thought. It's giving bear parade. but their faces are more kind of that traditional kind of creepy angular, similar to the way they drew the Riddler in their DC stuff, where he's just giving kind of somebody who would be exposing himself in the woods, that kind of vibe. Yeah. Yeah.
I get you.
Yeah.
But yes, there are moments where it is still the ugly people kind of look, but when he needs to draw pretty, he draws pretty here. And it kind of really fits with the Spider-Man story in the sense that these are the core issues, like that 40 to 48 period where Spidey would go from being, you know, the little kid vigilante, the Weasley, like puny Parker, into the character that we got to know for decades after that, the kind of strapping young man who has the Parker luck. And that's what's really keeping him down. It's not that he's an outcast anymore. He's just doomed to always be in a position where he has to think of others before he thinks of the easy life, like giving in and enjoying the moment, which I think is wrapped up perfectly that after being doted on by these two beautiful women, both of which are very interested in him, he has to feign, I don't want you here, so that he can go and fight the vultures who are fighting just outside his house. And you see on his face that moment, he has that little rah, 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 rah. And it's like, that's Parker. That is the Parker that we get to know during this time period and becomes the Parker that stays after that. It's just always like, God damn it, I want to enjoy myself, but I can't because I got to go do the Spider-Man stuff. And that's kind of the thing that's kind of be interesting because also when Spider-Man first appeared in those earlier comics, part of him really enjoyed being Spider-Man because it was an escape from the high school life where he's treated like crap. With Spider-Man, he was somebody. But now it's at the point where it's like, okay, I've been Spider-Man for a while. That's kind of taken a back seat in the sense that it's no longer, ooh, just the thrill of being Spider-Man is the best thing ever. It's now, oh, this is a job and these other cool things in my life are starting to happen that I can't fully enjoy because I have this job.
Yeah, when your side hustle really cuts into your day life, it's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly.
The one, I'm not going to say quibble, I will say warning that I would give anyone before they read this, which I would so recommend, is that if you liked How I Met Your Mother up to the end, but then were really frustrated with the way it ended, it's kind of a similar narrative device. We spend way more time on Gwen, but then we finish in a different place. you have your normal kind of comic book thing where there is exposition as you're moving through and you're getting internal voice of our main character, but then you also, they're using this device where he's recording his thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
But we start off with the rose, the sad reminder, the visit, like, to where she fell, the OG. And then we're moving back and forth through time through the rest of the issues. And then where we end in the sixth, it's very similar without maybe all the lulls and the legendaries and the highest of fives. But it's kind of similar to that How I Met Your Mother. Is this the one? No, this is the one. So that's right. Where I would say it's not bad. I'm just saying, like, if that's not your jam, like, that kind of.
Yeah. Well, see, the reason for
deliberately
that.
Misleading somebody who may not know. But if you don't know about, like, Peter Parker stuff, even just from being in the world, then I don't know where you've been living.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The reason why that is that with this color theme is when they started it, when they decided we're going to do Daredevil Yellow, where it's him looking back at his past, they started the idea of the narrative that they were writing letters to dead people that were very important in their life. And so in that first series, Daredevil is still trying to get over the death of Karen Page, because while it was probably about 3 years after it happened in the comics, for Daredevil, it's probably 6 to 10 months after Karen has passed. And so he's writing the letters as a form of therapy to get through these feelings. And so they decided when they wrote Spider-Man Blue that they were going to take that same motif and have it that Spidey is trying to deal with his past mistakes and the fact that he still holds pain and trauma from the time of seeing his girlfriend get thrown off of the bridge and killed. And so this is him finding his form of therapy, the tape recordings and whatnot. And so that's why it leads to the end, is the idea of the inclusion of Mary Jane at the end is to show that she's very supportive of him trying to get through this trauma. Their third series, Hulk Gray, was set to be a similar motif of Bruce Banner talking to Betty Banner. But as they were putting the series together, Bruce Jones brought Betty Banner back in the Incredible Hulk series as the Mr. Blue. And that was a mysterious person for several months in the Hulk comic. And so they had to, on the fly, change it to Banner is going to Doc Samson and be having therapy sessions with him. And so they drew stuff to cover that. Now, of course, their last one in the series, Captain America White, it took a long time to come out. And so when they first pitched the idea, Bucky was dead. When they finally got the book out, the Winter Soldier had long been alive, but they didn't want to go through what they went through last time. So they said, fuck it. Cap had this story in his mind before the Winter Soldier came back. And so there is a kind of morbid connection to all these stories, is that they are all in a way dealing with death. And this one specifically, why it was called Spider-Man Blue, whereas Daredevil Yellow was called Daredevil Yellow because it was jumping back to his early days in the yellow suit. This was called Spider-Man Blue because they felt they wanted to tell a story that they've considered to be like jazz, where it's just kind of like this moody music that doesn't have a set path and goes left and right, and you feel all these emotions. And that's what Peter's going through at this time, is that he's not exactly sure on where he's going to land as this young man and what will happen. Will things work out with him and Gwen and all that sort of stuff? So that's why it's called Spider-Man Blue. So really the entire collection, the color series, does have a very morbid through line.
The other thing it did remind me of is that first episode of Mad Men, where we get that all-timer from Don Draper with whole Kodak pitch and talking about the back and forth and moving through time with the carousel. And that, especially with the aesthetic of this being done in that sort of noir type pastiche, especially the way the women are drawn, because we know Peter Parker villains. We know his main two ladies. And as we're moving back and forth, although it should have been more confusing, it isn't, because whether it's in comics or in animated shows, animated movies, live action movies, they've all done this sort of picking from the best, the most heartbreaking, the most kind of character relationship establishing moments for all of these different properties to establish where Peter is emotionally at that time. Is this before or after he's met MJ? Is this before or after he's dating MJ? Is this when his buddy's dating MJ? Is this before or after Gwen has fallen for him? In both ways. So it's in that way, yeah, that, and again, the jazz thing, even the color of blue, very reminiscent of the covers that they use for those albums, including the actual like Miles Davis kind of blue, which when I got my first iMac and I was debating, just like the weird, probably should have been diagnosed with something Virgo that I am, I was like, I can't just like import anything for the first physical CD that I import into iTunes on this device. Like this device is beautiful. It deserves like a moment. I need to think about this and look at my pile of physical CDs. It can't just be anything. I did toy with the idea briefly of Rick Astley, even before Rick Rolling was a thing, but I went with Miles Davis kind of blue for the first album I imported. And that color of blue, like that sort of blue-gray vibe where blue is used to almost substitute for like a sepia and or black and white kind of vibe. It's a certain vibe of kind of contemplative pain, but also things can be beautiful within that.
Yeah, no, totally. Now, also for listeners, if you want context on when Peter is sitting down and recording these tapes, it's roughly about 10 years after Gwen's death in Peter Parker's timeline. Of course, this came out in the 2000s, so it would be a good 30 years after those issues came out. The idea is that that's kind of, even though it's never flat out said, it's kind of roughly around the 10-year anniversary of Gwen passing away. So that gives it more of a framing on why these feelings and this trauma has come back up. The anniversary is coming soon. Now, again, this is not overstated in this. It's more of just a vibe. But the vibe is felt, definitely. Now, looking through the book, I'm trying to figure out if this is the Mary Jane pick or if it's the next one where you talked about her kind of popping on the coming in.
Yes, it's the arriving at the party. Wait, no, but there's another party outfit. Arrival.
Well, this isn't her arriving at the party. This is her bringing the chicken soup. Because this has her sitting down to feed him the chicken soup, and you said something about the way her curves in that one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's not that one. There's another one where she's sitting. But yeah, that one's up there, but I think it's the New Year's party where everybody's coming in. So then he first has like Gwen arrives and he's, and then MJ arrives. And
for the Valentine's Day party for Flash's send off. Yeah.
Why did I think it was Valentine's? Yeah.
Why did you think it was New Year's? Because New Year's,
I think. Oh, there was a lot of champagne mentioned at that party though, too. Yeah. I think they were toasting Flash. Yeah. Yeah. Flash, I always thought was kind of ridiculous for that move, but then I remembered not only did I know one actual human through a friend who had done medical school in the States, we have the data, like the enlistment in the Army and other armed services after 9/11, like people get inspired by a moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, Flash was already a fanboy, but then he has a moment with Spider-Man and decides, because he realizes after interacting with him more closely, oh, he's like us. Like, he's just this young guy and he's out there literally like putting his life on the line every day. I should do more.
9/11 is a great example. Enlistment went up during that time. There's a couple other moments in history that definitely affected young Americans, and they went and they signed up, like Flash Thompson. Yeah.
Yes. And we're aware that comic books specifically have been used in a way for Army lists, but like they were one of the biggest advertisers for quite some time. And, you know, you have the whole Captain America thing. Definitely, if you want to serve, you should serve, but I don't think you should do it because of a comic book character. Back to you.
True. But in Flash's defense, he's not doing it because of a comic book character. Yeah. This is a guy in his real life.
Yeah.
But I also like the fact that Peter kind of, he's really confused by that moment, because he's like, yeah, you know, Flash has always been a big fan of Spider-Man. And I've always been like, whatever, because he's never been a fan of Peter Parker. He's treated me like crap. But this moment here, I feel odd because he's idolized Spidey and now he's going to go do this. And so I kind of feel responsible. And you see him kind of toying of like, how do I feel about this? And literally, I can't do anything to push it one way or the other with Flash because I can't reveal I'm Spider-Man to him. So, of course, years later, Flash would find out that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. And he would have his own moment of trying to reconcile that information. But the Flash moment of him doing that, that was really well done. But what I really enjoyed in the final issue is it's the moment where Peter does the, I'm going to go do the Spider-Man thing, but he's using the cover of, I got to go take photos, that really hits Gwen of the ideas that it's like, oh, where everybody else is running away from the problem, you're running towards it. And that is kind of like very much, and she even mentions, kind of like firemen running into a fire. It's the idea that Peter is willing to risk his life to do what he thinks is right. Now, in this case, it's to do his job in Gwen's
eyes.
Both of
them. Yeah.
Yes, but in Peter's eyes, it's because he has to great power, great responsibility. But even though she doesn't know he's Spider-Man, she can see the hero in him in that moment.
He's about that life. Peter yeah. is always about that life. And I think for the other people, especially the men in his life that are wondering why do all these dimes flock to him?
Yeah.
It's the ultimate hustler doesn't talk about it. He'd be about it. And they can tell.
That's right. In other words,
he doesn't have to say he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
He just is.
In other words, Earth to Flash, drop dead. Which I think is probably one of Mary Jane's best lines in this. Mary Jane is very much, like you brought up the noir stuff. Mary Jane is very His Girl Friday in this. You know, she's quick with the lines. She's a femme fatale. But she also knows how to make a moment. And that's what we really appreciate about Mary Jane in this book. She's the moment maker in this story, while Gwen is very much the sit back and take it all in kind of character. The only part in this story where Gwen is really advancing, aside from the very end of the story, is when her and Mary Jane are having the sick boy turf war. But other than that, Mary Jane is the aggressive one. Gwen is very much the, I like you, but I don't know exactly how to say it kind of girl. And so we get this great playing of these two characters. But Mary Jane is just has some awesome moments in this book.
It's kind of classic Betty and Veronica, as it always has been with the two of them.
Yeah.
But in this book specifically, I like that it doesn't seem so much like they're pitted against each other. Like they're aware that they're both interested in Peter,
yeah.
but it's also that they have their own activities. They have their own personalities.
Yeah.
They, yes, there's a lot of time spent in their friend group waiting for Peter to show up for things or wonder what he's up to. But you do see a little bit more of them just, if not on their own, expressing their own opinions to the other people in their friend group.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I agree with you on that. Like, probably the best moment for that is the housewarming party that doesn't happen. Because we see a lot of Gwen and Mary Jane just being themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is a fun book. Does a great job of really showing the supporting cast of Spider-Man from that era in a new light with a bit more depth. And there's, of course, some great, we talked about the great drawings of the pretty people, but the fight scenes in this, which are, although they're short, some great freaking double page spreads, splash pages, big action moments that are kind of just popped in there as well. So if you're a fan of Spidey, if you're a fan of Peter Parker, if you're a fan of the supporting cast, there's something in there for all of you.
And the last issue, it really, I'm not going to say I didn't cry, but I did get a little bit misty because it brings you all the way down. It's legit bittersweet.
Mm.
So if you like that moment in No Way Home when Andrew Garfield catches Zendaya, the way they wrap it up in a bow in the last issue and they go hard in the paint pun intended, for the blue coloring, except for this one little photo strip. Yeah, that's it's the stuff.
No, it's very good. Yes, definitely. I would recommend Spider-Man fans check it out. And as somebody, if you're just interested, if you're just curious about, I just want to read a cool character study, so to speak, on the Spider-Man characters from the early days, definitely worth checking out, in my opinion.
Agreed.
All right, fantastic. Well, we've come to the end of another episode of Back Issue Bloodbath. Betula, where can the good folks find you?
At InnerShift.com, on social things at Obesa Kantawit, OBESACANTAVIT, and here with you.
Of course, you can find everything I do over at GeekCardShow.com. Follow me on Twitter at GeekCard. Follow me on Instagram at Andrew_of_geek_hard. Follow this very show on Facebook at Back Issue Bloodbath, where we post a new episode every week. But the easiest way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe to us on your podcasting platform of choice. If you're a longtime listener and you haven't already, you're just making life harder for yourself. Because, you know, if you subscribe, you know it's going to happen every week and you won't have to search for it, right? So there you go. This has been Back Issue Bloodbath. I've been Andrew Young.
I've been Petolino.
Have yourself a good.